Hey, Franklin County, it's your county administrator and host of Talk of the County, Kenneth Wilson. I have a special episode for you this week, and it will be honoring Women's History Month. We have two dynamic women that are superstars in Franklin County. We have our own Erica C. Crawley, who is the first elected African-American county commissioner in history, and L.C. Johnson, the founder of Zora's House. Ms. Johnson is a super entrepreneur indeed. She has been recently profiled on syndicated national talk shows. So that's a big deal, a really big deal. So I expect them to have a very engaging conversation. They both are examples of she leads, one in government, the other in business. So I expect them to have plenty of spicy things to talk about. And I can't wait to sit down and hear this podcast myself as the host of Talk of the County. So please check out this episode anywhere you get your podcast. Again, Talk of the County is all about informing, inspiring, with a little bit of entertainment sprinkled in. And in closing, just remember, be you, because no one else has time to. Thank you.
Elsie. Girl, how are you?
Hi, so thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I was really excited to get this invitation. We joke often that even as two Black women leaders, we don't get to see each other as much as we would like. So if it takes a podcast for us to get together, that is really, really cool. So thanks for having me.
No, thank you for making time and letting everyone know, especially the county and the people who are in the county who don't know. I did a talk yesterday about all things county government, and everybody was learning from each other. And so I think not even just for the public, but even for county staff and employees to know who you are, what you're doing here in the county, and what you're doing specifically for Black women and women of color. So tell us about Zora's House, your path to where you are right now, because I think our very first introduction was you were at the YWCA.
Yes.
And it was a conversation around like racism or racial equity and poverty. And that was when I first met you. But now here you are. So if you want to give us a little bit of history about your past and how you got to be where you are now.
Sure. So I am not a native Central Ohioan, Franklin Countyan. I don't know if that's a phrase, but
we don't say this.
We don't say this. I'm not a native Franklin Countyan. I actually was born in New York City and raised primarily in the Southeast, so North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia. I got to Columbus in the way that many transplants do. I find that folks either come here for school, for work, or because they meet somebody who is from Central Ohio in some other part of the country, fall in love, and are shepherded back into the state of Ohio. And that's definitely what happened with me. So I moved here with my husband, who is from Columbus, in 2015. He and I met living in Boston, but he always really had a goal of coming back home. And part of his work was always thinking about how he could come back home as a professional and think about how to make Columbus, Ohio, like a more equitable place. And so when I got here, I already kind of had that lens of like, I'm not from here, but like, this is still home, right? Mm-hmm. Because when we have kids, like their dad will be from here, their grandparents will have, you know, spent a lot of time in the city. So it always felt like home. So when I first moved to Ohio, I actually really struggled to get connections initially, right? I was living in my in-laws' basement, which all millennials do at some point,
yes.
Move home, live in a basement or a childhood bedroom for a couple of years, just part of our journey.
Right.
And so I was living with my in-laws, and the only person I knew was my husband and his family. And I had a really hard time getting connected with other women. And I was really at that point in a place of transition in my own life. So we were recently married. We were thinking about having kids, and something that had always been true in every part of my life, where I'd gone through a big transition, was having other women of color in my life. And so I really felt the urge for that. And, you know, my desire to find that type of community to support me through my transition and to find that type of relationships and friendships and support was really kind of the impetus to Zora's House. And I had the opportunity to, before I launched Zora's House, actually got a job working at the YWCA Columbus, whose mission is to eliminate racism and empower women. Y'all see there's a little bit of theme going on here. And so through that work, just got a chance to not just understand my own journey as a transplant and a Black woman who was interested in leadership in this community, but also really understanding kind of systemically some of the ways that folks were working to make this community more equitable. Mm-hmm. And all of that together kind of formed the vision of Zora's House.
Oh, wonderful. So if you could tell us a little bit about Zora, you know, Hurston, her legacy, and then when did you say, okay, you know what, I'm ready to launch something bigger than what I have or what I currently see right now. Can you give us a little bit of history on that?
Sure. So I love talking about Zora Neale Hurston. She is so cool, and she is who Zora's House is named after. Even though many people get confused and think that my name is Zora, and in fact, it's not. So that is always really funny, especially when I send email signed LC and people are like, thank you, Zora. I really appreciated it. And I'm like, not enough to read it, apparently. Glad you appreciate it.
Right.
And so, in fact, Zora's House is named after Zora Neale Hurston. Zora Neale Hurston was a writer and anthropologist who lived and worked during the Harlem Renaissance. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I really loved about Zora's work, and I see you have one of her books.
I do.
Yes.
Their Eyes Were Watching God.
Their Eyes Were Watching God, one of her most famous novels that she's written, and one of my favorite novels of hers. But one of the things that was really, that's always really inspired me about Zora's work is that during that time, a lot of writers were really encouraged to only write about certain views of Blackness. This was during a time when you were thinking about after Reconstruction, there was Jim Crow like segregation. Mm-hmm. There were so many things in our world that really dehumanized like mm-hmm. Black people. And so one of the things that collectively that in that movement, we said, well, if we show through our art just like how, you know, human we are, like if we show them like we are just as good, we are just as smart, mm-hmm. we are just as accomplished, right? That like this idea that we could prove that we were enough to be considered human. Mm-hmm. And part of that was encouraged through the writing and the art, like I said, showcasing only certain visions of Blackness. And Zora Neale Hurston really bucked that trend. So she wrote in dialect, which a lot of people did not like. Mm-hmm. They said it made us sound really ignorant and it didn't make us sound intelligent. And so she wrote in dialect. She wrote about women who, you know, drank and had sex and got divorced and did all the things that women were not supposed to do during that time. But what I thought was so special about her work and has always inspired me is that she really said, like, we are just enough. We mm-hmm. are human enough in our full experience.
Absolutely.
Right? And that like all of that deserves to be celebrated. Mm-hmm. We don't have to just highlight this one piece of ourselves to say this is what is going to give us the key to be seen as fully human. And she really celebrated that full spectrum of especially Black women and their experiences. And I've always loved that about her work. But the other really inspiring part of her story is that even though Zora Neale Hurston was so prolific during her time as a writer and an early anthropologist, she actually died penniless and was buried in an unmarked grave, which is mind-boggling to me. But it wasn't until the 1970s when Alice Walker, who was teaching at Barnard at the time, came across some of her work because Zora had spent some time there and done some writing there. And so Alice came across her work and as we are wont to do was like, how come I don't know her, right? Mm-hmm. Like she really had this moment where she was asking, why don't we know about this woman? Right. Why aren't we teaching her work? Why is she not a household name? And so she wrote an essay called In Search of Zora Neale Hurston. And you know, it is the reason that we kind of like have an understanding of Zora Neale Hurston's work and her impact to this day. And, you know, when she was done with that essay, she actually walked the graveyard where Zora Neale Hurston was buried, and she marked her grave. Mm-hmm. And the inscription is so beautiful because it comes from the opening passage of that essay, and it says, "We will not allow our geniuses to be forgotten." Mm-hmm. And so that is just so powerful to me, and I feel like it really embodies the spirit of what Zora's House is about. Mm-hmm. So one woman of color looking at another and saying, as long as I live, like, I'm not gonna allow your light, your genius to be diminished, to be forgotten. I'm going to ensure that everybody knows, like, not how brilliant I am, but how brilliant you are.
Yeah.
Right. And so that is such a foundation of Zora's House and what we believe in and what this organization is all about.
Oh, wow. I'm like I have goosebumps, but I always have goosebumps listening to you and hearing your passion behind this vision that you have for Zora's House and her legacy. And, you know, when we think about what happened in Reconstruction and then Jim Crow, but during the Reconstruction era, like, there was so much community, right? There was so much togetherness. We had more elected officials, more community members, leaders, in places and spaces where decisions were being made. And we know that they were there because of Black women, right, and their contributions. And so as we are in Women's History Month and celebrating Women's History Month, when you think about fostering an inclusive and empowering workplace for women, given Zora Neale Hurston and her vision for our community and Black women, what do you see here and what do you hope to cultivate in this space?
Yeah, that's such a good question.
What are you cultivating? Not hope to. You are doing it. It's already been called into being.
I love that. Oh, I love that frame. Now you're trying to give me chills. So when I think a lot about Zora Neale Hurston and her story and the fact that it took Alice Walker to revive her legacy, that the world and her industry, she was underpaid in her industry. She was not recognized for the work that she did. In fact, she was one of the first anthropologists to actually study. She was from rural Florida. Mm-hmm. And she did anthropological research in rural Florida, in Haiti. And at the time, it was frowned upon for mm-hmm. anthropologists to study communities that they identify with in any way, right? And so she was one of the early anthropologists who said, actually, there's some real richness in being able to have that trust and that context mm-hmm. in your work, right? Like, that was her shepherding in a generation of anthropologists who could then do that work and have that road a little bit smoother for them. So she did all these groundbreaking things, and yet the world did seek to diminish her, mm-hmm. right? The world, the spaces that she was in did not value her. They did not pay her mm-hmm. her worth. And that's something that I think about very often, right? That, like, I want Zora's legacy and I don't want Zora's legacy.
Right.
And what does it look like to honor her by ensuring that Black women and other women of color don't just have the opportunity to do their work, but that they are paid for their work, that they are supported in the work that they're doing, that they have joy and rest mm-hmm. in their work, right? That they're not ground down mm-hmm. in their work. And how can we create that type of space? And so, you know, there's work that we do as an organization. We have programs, we have a membership model that really encourages women of color to come and plug into that type of community and support. But I think in the larger sense, one of the things that really excites me about Zora's House is that we've had members come in and say, you know, like, I remember one of our early members who said, like, you know, at Zora's House, I practice who I want to be in the rest of the world, mm-hmm. right? That, like, this was the space where she could come and feel safe to practice being bold and being gentle with herself mm-hmm. and being vulnerable and know that, like, in other places where that may not be welcome, that she will have built that muscle. Absolutely. That her body would remember, mm-hmm. right? That her mind would remember in times when you might otherwise freeze. Oh, wait, I remember what it's supposed to feel like mm-hmm. for me to feel encouraged, for me to feel brave. I remember what that's supposed to feel like. And so for a space like this to exist in our county, where it is that microcosm of the world that we want to see built, and it is a training ground for women of color to start to exist in a world that doesn't exist yet.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. That's good. And so you said you have some programming. Can you tell us a little bit about the programming that you have?
Yeah.
And that, the programming you will have as you complete, I will steal your thunder because I know we're going to talk about what's baking and brewing and what you're fostering here. So can you tell us about some key programming?
Sure. So one of the things that is really important for us is that our programs are all about ensuring that women of color can thrive and not just survive. I know that y'all think if we have a roof over our heads and food on the table, we should be content. Mm-hmm. However,
right.
That is not enough. That's not enough for women of color. We should not feel like that is enough mm-hmm. for women of color in our community to have their basic needs met, right? And so while I very much admire, have many colleagues in the social services sector who are addressing the disparities women of color have in this community with lack of housing, with food insecurity, with transportation and childcare, that are very, very critical. The work that Zora's House does is really to ensure once women of color have that level of stability, how can we ensure that they can lead? Mm-hmm. How can we ensure that they can create? How can we ensure that they can disrupt? So a lot of our programming is really about, okay, you're good, you feel stable, you may have like a job, you have money coming in, but now how do we level you up, right?
Absolutely.
And so we have a couple programs that do that specifically. We have a program called Her Way Business Builder, which is all about helping women of color to reach profitability in their businesses with their initial business ideas. There are a number of programs that serve women of color entrepreneurs in the community. One of the things I think we really focus on is taking folks from either idea to like business model or from side hustle to like formalized business. Mm-hmm. Right. So we focus on folks who are like, but I've had this side hustle for like, 3 years and I've never paid any taxes. And it's like, but girl,
right.
That ain't it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and so starting to figure out like how we get folks who are already doing work, like able to like do it at a different and higher level. Mm-hmm. Another program that we really love here is called Wealth Builders. So it is a program that focuses on what we call first generation wealth builders. Mm-hmm. So many people are familiar with the term first generation college student, and that term really emerged because when somebody is the first person in their family to go to college, they are experiencing all of these things that like nobody in their family has ever gone through. There's nobody that they can really turn to be like, hey, help me navigate this, or help me understand like how I should, move through this application process, this financial aid process, right? Well, for many of those first generation college students, they then go on to be first generation wealth builders, mm-hmm. right? So they may be the first person in their family to ever hold a six-figure job or a job that has a retirement account or to, meet certain financial milestones that there's nobody that they can turn to in their family and be like, hey, could you run me through, like, how did you set up your life insurance when knowing good and well, like, they don't know,
right?
Like, your uncle don't know, your mama doesn't know. Mm-hmm. And so what does it look like to really ensure that those folks have the support and resources and education that's really competent to address both the financial trauma that comes with growing up in financial instability? Mm-hmm. Even if you make six figures now, if you grew up in financial instability, that affects how you manage your
Absolutely.
Money, right? If you still have family members who are experiencing poverty or experiencing financial instability, that affects how you plan your retirement if you know your parents don't have any retirement, mm-hmm. right? Like you're now planning in a different way than maybe yeah. somebody who comes from generational wealth or even comes from generational stability, mm-hmm. right? So that's that program. Again, it's really about taking things that exist maybe in the world, but are not catered to women of color. And we have oftentimes very unique experiences. So I could literally be like, oh, this candle making class is cool. All right, we're gonna do a candle making class for women of color, right? And the people will come here and make candles and be like, man, I'm usually the only woman of color in my craft class. right? Because so often, whether you niche down to just like an interest that somebody has, or you get a little bit more macro and think about like some of the critical skills or things that people need, so often women of color find themselves to be the only one. Mm-hmm. So our program really focuses on how do we create things that are made with women of color in mind, not programs that they have to shoehorn themselves into or figure out how to fit into or constantly have to explain their identities or their experiences. Mm-hmm. How do we create programs that take that into account?
I love that. I love that. Two things. So I want to say last time I was here, we were having a conversation about what it means to be a leader, you know, and lead in a space, but then feel a burden by carrying a community and having expectations, having no outlet. Rest is like, what is that?
Right.
You know, even when we are resting, we never really rest. And when we don't get up feeling well rested, or like we had the ability to shut our mind mm-hmm. off, or you know, or what does it look like now that I gotta get up and go to work and I work with two men, right? And being a leader in the space, like, and then not having an outlet to be a community with
That's
others
right.
who are like, I get it. And you can come here and we can hear it and we can hold space for you and how important it is to have spaces like that. So thank you for giving me that space when I was here last time. But also to what you were saying about being a first generation wealth builder, I think I've never heard that term before until now, but I think it is so critical for us to have places where we can go to say, you know what, yes, I make six figures, but I still live paycheck to paycheck.
That's
I
right.
still have more month than money and I don't understand it, or I'm helping my mother, or mm-hmm. I'm carrying her bills or my father's bills or whatever, and
That's right.
like taking on the caregiver role and still trying to keep your head above water. I was in Atlanta the other day getting a facial with a woman that I know really well. She was like, describe in one word how you're doing. And I said, I'm surviving.
Mm.
And then I was like, existing,
mm.
right? And that's why I always use the term, I want everyone in our community to have the same opportunities to thrive and not just survive.
That's
and
right.
I think having a Zora's House where you create community, you hold space for others, for women of color especially, who are trying to navigate this world that is so unfair at times and unjust, I think, you know, I wish we could replicate and have more Zora's houses.
Hey, listen, your lips to God's ears.
I mean, you're doing phenomenal work, and I if you would just share, you know, we talked, and I hope it, you know, I'm not out of line by asking, you know, there were people who were not bought into the vision mm-hmm. of why we needed a space specifically for women of color. And I know when it comes to funding for something like that, that wasn't the easiest. And now you're flourishing. Can you just talk about how that felt, understanding like you had this vision and people were like, well, we've never done that before. We never invested in something like that. But you obviously leave people moved, touched, and inspired, and investing in Zora's House, people are wanting to do that all the time now. So how did you get from a place of, we don't invest in that, and I don't understand how this, what outcomes look like, to where you are right now?
Oh, I love that question. But before we even get to that question, I want to respond to what you said about, you know, talking to your girlfriend and being like, oh, I'm just, you know, I'm surviving, mm-hmm. You know, I'm existing, right? And I think what's so interesting is that so many people would look at you and be like, no. Mm-hmm. Erica Crowley, is she thriving, girl? She cute, she got power, she's like out here, right? Like she's ascended, you know? And so many people would look at those things and be like, no, she's made it. She doesn't feel these things, mm-hmm. like she is thriving, right? And I think one of the things that is so critical for us to understand is that even in 2024, women of color are still swimming against the current in order to lead.
Absolutely.
Right? That
Absolutely.
Like, it feels like, oh no, but y'all are so much more visible now. And you know, you have all these, like every other day there's a think piece about, you know, women of color and what they need and what they, but the reason that we keep talking about this is because it's still not happening.
Right.
That women of color are still burning out at incredible rates, right? Mm-hmm. That like, I was reading an article recently that talked about this idea of like, not so much, you know, that once a woman of color like shatters a glass ceiling, so often she's standing on a glass cliff, which mm-hmm. means that she has been brought on to do something in her community or her corporation or wherever that either her predecessor couldn't do mm-hmm. or that has never been done before, mm-hmm. but not given any additional resources or support in order to make it happen. So come on in here and make some miracles. Bring your cape.
Right.
You know, and that whole idea of bringing women of color, and this is real research, right? Mm-hmm. This is research around why women of color, why Black women are exiting these leadership roles. Mm-hmm. Because we tired. Which camera should I look at? It's real.
Beyond tired.
We're beyond tired. And you know, in the midst of, we'll talk in a moment about, you know, kind of what you were asking about, you know, how we brought people along. But along the way, there's had to be a lot of vulnerability, both with our funders. This space holds a lot of folks' vulnerability and tears and truths in this space where people feel like they can speak and say the things that, like, they don't get to say. Mm-hmm. Even for you and I, like, because we're in Taurus House, we're going to say some real things on this podcast, absolutely. Right? Like, if there's a feeling that happens when you walk into the space and it's like, your truth is welcome here, whatever mm-hmm. it is. And so much of that has had to be a part of bringing people along, mm-hmm. right? Like, I remember in the early days of Zora's House, I started Zora's House. I had only lived in Columbus for like 2.5 years mm-hmm. or something when I launched Zora's House. And, you know, so I was still new to the community, didn't really know much. I'm kind of like wandering around trying to get my footing. And, you know, I would start to like kind of meet with different funders and different folks early on. So I would say, oh, you should meet with this person. And so early on, like, I would meet with funders and meet with other leaders in the community. And I would say, well, yeah, I want to start this like community space and incubator for women of color. And, you know, I would talk about our mission. I would talk about like activating women of color in their leadership and their dreams. And they would either say, oh, we do fun things for women of color. And I'd be like, oh, what do you fund? They'd be like, oh, we fund like the homeless shelter, like right. the food pantry and I'm like,
that's offensive.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Well, number one, okay, we're going to start there. Yeah. I'm offended. Literally being like, oh, we do fun things for y'all. It's like, look at these things, right? And like not understanding that women of color have this full spectrum, that right. like we exist upon this like full spectrum of experiences and identities and deserve to be supported across that spectrum,
absolutely.
Right? And so it became very clear early on that like for many people, when you say women of color, that's synonymous with low income women, mm-hmm. no matter what comes before or what comes after. Cause I'm like, I could have swore, I have been told many times and I'm very articulate and I know I did not just describe a homeless shelter to you.
Right.
So how are we now having this conversation?
Right.
Right. And so it was really actually in those moments being like, that's not what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
That's not what we're talking about mm-hmm. here. And continuing over and over to kind of talk about, you know, Zora's House and the work that we were doing. And people would still just kind of say, oh, even when they got it, it was one of those where people felt like, oh, that sounds nice. Like a little social club for like Black women. Mm-hmm. Like that sounds like a nice mm-hmm. to have.
Like a thing.
You know, yeah. that sounds like, you know, they didn't feel like it was something that was like necessary. Mm-hmm. They felt like it was a nice to have. So then 2020 happened.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden we started having very different conversations about racial equity, about the experience of Black people in this country. And at that point, people were like, oh, mm-hmm. I see, right? Mm-hmm. And even then, as we started to have those conversations with folks, and we would still meet funders and folks who wanted to be supportive, and they would say, well, we do want to be supportive, but we like historically have funded, what do they call it? Emergent needs, like social needs. I can't mm-hmm. think of like what the word is, but it has needs in it, right? Mm-hmm. Basic needs. Okay. They're like, we have historically funded basic needs. And I'm like, so is racial equity not a basic need?
Mm-hmm.
Is that not a basic need that impacts the health, the like environment, the ability mm-hmm. for certain people in our community to access like the full value of living here. Is that not a basic need, right? And sometimes you just gotta frame stuff so people sound dumb saying no. So it's just like, right. So.
And then just leave them in their uncomfortable.
That's right. Right? Like, it's like, oh, right. I know that's not how we usually talk about it, but like, that's how we're gonna talk about it today.
Yeah.
And thankfully, we actually do have a number of people in our community who, a number of funders, a number of individuals who like in the very beginning, they kind of didn't get it. And like now they really do.
Mm-hmm.
Like they do get it. And when we have these conversations, they are willing and they were willing to listen,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think that's been a big part of how we've gotten from where we were to where we are now.
I love that. I love that. And so I'm going to ask this question about mentorship or leadership training that you might have or programming, especially for Black women to be bold and unapologetic, like you just, you know, describe these conversations like, no, I'm not, let me tell you what I'm talking about. Like, I'm not going to allow you to try to reframe this or try to make this be something else so you feel comfortable funding it. It's like, no, this is what we need. But everybody doesn't have that voice and are scared to use it, even if they do have it and they know that they have a voice. And so we still have this people pleasing, or I don't want to be a disruptor, because sometimes being a disruptor, mm-hmm. I come across as, you know, you are a troublemaker or whatever. So do you have any mentorship programs or leadership programs that help women use the voice that they have and be bold and unapologetic?
So we do have a program here at Zora's House called our Leadership Fellows Program. It's a 6-month cohort, and it requires people to spend 8 hours a week in the space. We have folks who work full time and are still able to like talk to their leaders about spending some time in the, like spending that time in the space. We have folks, it is truly intergenerational, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have folks who are in their mid 20s all the way up to like in their, you know, 50s and 60s who are a part of these cohorts. And, you know, a big part of that is kind of that leadership development, that professional development, where we are talking to them and they're getting kind of a behind the scenes view of how Zora's House exists, how we operate, like what it looks like for us to, you know, step into our leadership in real time as an organization that's led by women of color and that is very grassroots, right? But the other thing that I have really heard from people and also seen myself is just the role modeling that happens when you become a member of Zora's House. So we have a number of programs. You don't need to be a member in order to participate in a Zora's House program. But what we love about membership is that it's our opportunity to kind of like wrap our arms around you over like a full year,
okay.
You know? So it's like a program, you know, you may be here for 6 months and it may be a little bit of like in and out. But with membership, it's like, we really get to like welcome you in and kind of keep track of you for a year and pour into you for a year. And one of the things that's really cool is that people get to see other women of color. It's not just me, right? We get to see each other being brave
mm-hmm.
every day, right? And we celebrate that, right? We have a whole like listserv called the Tribe List, which is all about like the women of color who are members able to like communicate with each other. And constantly people will just email me like, y'all, I just opened my first storefront and I'm feeling nervous. Like, I just need some encouragement. And you'll get like 10, 15 emails within like an hour. Girl, you got this, sis. Like, go ahead, girl. You got this. That's amazing. Right? Like, we'll have members get groups together to go support somebody's art mm-hmm. opening. Right? And just be like, well, she posted like, hey, this is my first time, like my first ever art exhibit. This just happened, actually. And one of our members was like, hey, y'all, like, I'm having my first ever art exhibit. If you can come, like, let me know. And then some other members got a group together. They didn't know each other mm-hmm. and they probably didn't know her that well, other than the fact that they were all Zora's House members. And they just went just to be like,
that.
We got you. Like, you did this thing,
mm-hmm.
you know? And
you're
so
not and
you're not alone. And you're not alone,
yeah.
right? Like,
yeah.
you put it out there and we said, we at your back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, turn around. You can see us.
I love that. Oh, I love that. Since you have programming that's available, you can be a member or you could just come and have this space where you can work and be in community. I know you also just had a capital campaign because you are trying to
engaged in
almost
currently
almost over though.
That's correct.
Because you are almost at your target.
Almost at the goal. Yes,
that's wonderful. So can you tell us what we invested in, what's coming? I'm excited to hear all about it. I've seen it. You know, the designs and all of that, and we've talked about the vision, but tell everybody else what you're building.
Yes,
physically
and otherwise. Yes, thank you so much for having that opening. And even though I know this isn't about the relationship between Zora's House and the county is one of the folks that has supported the work that we're trying to do. And the building of our new 10,000 square foot community hub that is really meant to be a center of innovation and leadership and creativity, supporting women of color for the benefit of the entire community, right? Because that's the other thing that I don't think I've had the chance or have spoken enough about on this podcast, which is that we support women of color, and when we do that, our whole community benefits.
Absolutely.
Our entire community benefits from those diverse perspectives, from more art, from more women of color in neighborhood leadership and PTAs and across the spectrum, like we all benefit. Women of color are the fastest growing population in Franklin County.
Absolutely.
So if we're thinking about what it's gonna take to actually create not just an equitable county, but a county that feels rich in stories and perspectives and leadership, the type of place that somebody from outside of Ohio would be like, man, have y'all heard about what's going on in Columbus, what's going on in Franklin County? Like, have y'all heard about what's happening over there? If we want that, we can't do it without women of color.
Absolutely.
So when I think about this space, I really think about this as being that hub where we are encouraging women of color and their dreams and their, and like I said, their leadership and their creativity. We're really excited to build this space because it's also gonna be, it's three stories. We're gonna have a cafe on the first floor. We're gonna have a co-working space on the first floor. Second floor, we'll have like meeting space and places for folks to have private offices. And then on the third floor, what I am really, really excited about, we are going to have a new program called our Residential Incubator, which is an opportunity for folks to come and stay for up to a week while they're working on a project. So imagine if like a co-working space and an Airbnb like had a little Zora's baby, and that would be the third floor. And I just imagine, right, like the times in my life when I've been like, oh, I just need to get out of my space, like I just want to go write, or I just want to go work, and I don't want to be mom for a little bit, and I don't want to be wife, and I don't even want to be friend. I just want to be me. And I want to go, you know, invest in myself. And so to have that kind of space exist in Franklin County, I believe that it really will be a beacon across the region, right? Like, we already have people who, for some of our larger events, who drive from Dayton, from Cleveland, from Cincinnati, you know, and so now I'm saying, like, hey, we have this space that can actually, like, come here, stay for a few days, like, work on advancing one of your projects, and there's nothing really like that or anywhere else in the country. So we are really excited. We're on the cutting edge of, like, creating a space like this. There are very few, again, anywhere in the country that really center and are all about, like, the leadership and the thought leadership and, you know, the ideas and entrepreneurial pursuits of women of color. So it is going to be really special. It is a, we are in the midst of a $6 million capital campaign to complete that building. And, you know, when we first said, okay, we want to do this and we want to raise capital, and we had people literally tell us, like, you will never be able to do that. You will never be able to raise that money. Yes. It's very one of those raw moments. We've had many real moments in this space.
And I love you for it.
Same. You know, because also not enough. You know, but it was, I remember like hearing that and being like, your organization is not ready. You do not have what it takes to do this. And it was at that time, and I tell people all the time, you know, and I tell this especially to Black women, I'm like, be careful who you share your Tinder dreams with, yes. right? Before they're full grown, before they're ready to be out in the world, when they still feel soft and like, you know, you have to be very discerning
Absolutely.
Around who you allow to witness you dreaming in that way mm-hmm. so audaciously, so radically. And so it is, it was just one of those things where, you know, I kind of had that feedback that like, oh, you're not gonna be able to do it. And I remember calling like one of my best friends and I was just like, oh my gosh, like, am I crazy? Mm-hmm. Like, should I just stop this? And she was like, you can do this. You know, you can do this. And you know, you cannot listen to anybody who tells you that you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they said that we would never raise this money. And as of today, we've raised 5.3 of our 6 million. We're so close. Hey. We're almost there.
Love it.
So excited. And we're just this close. Like, it's gonna happen probably over the next couple months. You'll be seeing something on social media like, we did it. Like, it happened. Yeah. We raised it. You know, and that's the story that we want to tell for Zora's House, for the women of color in our community, right? That like, your radical imagination is welcome here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I unfortunately missed the groundbreaking, but I definitely will be at the ribbon cutting.
Oh, yes. I'm going to get it on your calendar yes. in advance.
Jayla, we'll put it on there and make sure that I am there. But when you told me about the vision, I'm like, oh, girl, I got you. We got you. I mean, because when we think about 2020, as you said, where there was this racial reckoning, the county had already been doing work in the poverty space. But before we could even start doing work in the poverty space, the community was like, we have to just say that any work that the county tries to do, it can't be done if we do not be bold and say that racism is a problem here, right? And everything has to have a racial equity lens. And so that is embedded in all that we do. And early in 2020, right when the pandemic happened, we were the first county in the state and one of the first counties in the country to declare racism as a public health crisis.
Yes.
Right? Yep. And so when you were telling me about the vision, but even before, like just expanding with the work that you were currently doing, I'm like, we have to be a part of this. Like, our declaration was not performative, right? Like, we really put teeth into that declaration and how we were going to invest public dollars, right? And this is exactly what we envision, to have a space where for Black women or women of color can come, because it enhances our mental health.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It enhances our physical health.
It does.
Right? It puts us in community. It makes us even more productive that we can be our full authentic selves when we go back out, right? And have to engage with the public or be adults or wives or mother, sister, all the things, right? And so I'm happy that we are a part of this. But I want to turn to you and talk about you and you being the Columbus CEO's Woman of the Year in 2023. Can you tell me about that experience and what that meant to you? And did you ever envision yourself like, hey, I'm like this woman CEO? Or like, how did you feel when you heard about that?
Man, that's such a good question. And it was weird. Mm-hmm. I did not envision myself necessarily like, oh, I'm gonna be this like woman CEO. Like that's gonna be me. You know, I sometimes struggle, like vulnerably, I sometimes struggle to like think of myself as a CEO. Like it's in my title, mm-hmm. But for so long, I just felt like, oh, I'm just Elsie, like just doing this kind of like little Zora's House thing, mm-hmm. right? Zora's House, just this little project that I have. And, mm-hmm. You know, I struggled to see it as like this. I remember somebody like told me, they're like, man, I think Zora's House is one of, if not the like fastest growing like nonprofits in Columbus. And I was like, what? Yeah. Like, you know, I struggled to like see it that way, to mm-hmm. see it as bigger than just my own like passion project, right? And I recognize that like, that isn't just in my head, mm-hmm. right? Like I've been like many women and many Black women, like I've been trained to see the things that I do, to diminish the things that I do, mm-hmm. to not see myself as a CEO, to not see myself as somebody whose work is deserving of that type of recognition.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it is always a strange dance when I like get awarded something. What I will say is that this was the first award that I've ever gotten that I did not apply for or like have to be nominated. I had to be nominated, but many times, like when I've received other things, I was, you know, listed as like 40 under 40, but you kind of have to like,
yeah,
you know, do a little something, you know it's coming, or like, you know, get somebody to nominate you. And so with this, I didn't even know it's like a peer nominated award. Mm-hmm. So I had no idea that my name was even up for consideration. I didn't even know anything about this award. And then they like called me in December and they were like, yeah, you won this award. I was like, I didn't even know I was in the running for this award.
Wow.
Right? It was like a complete, I was like, oh, like this is really surprising. I happen to have been going through some health issues at that time that I do think really had to do with a lot of the like stress and things that I was experiencing last year. And I was actually on medical leave for like pretty much all of December and part of January. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of got this news, and at the time I was like, oh, thank you. Like kind of went over my head. You know, and then, but when the actual issue came out and, you know, there was like, somebody just like texted me a picture. Mm-hmm. I didn't even also did not know when it was going to be published. They were like, yeah, sometime. And I'm like, that.
Like, come on.
Okay. I was like, can I get a date?
A time frame?
Can I get a time? Can I get a something in here? And so they were like, yeah, sometime in January. So it was like the fourth day of January or something. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine just texted me a picture of the cover. And she was like, okay, cover girl. And I was like, what? I didn't even know. And like, I'm not gonna lie, the cover was a vibe. I was just like, okay, you know? And so it was really, then I felt like I really got to celebrate it. You know, like I felt like I really got to celebrate it once it became kind of public knowledge and people were so supportive, which was really, really incredible. And I think that type of affirmation, like, women of color leaders who are blazing trails, like we need that. Like
absolutely.
We need that affirmation. Like people may think, oh, they're so confident, they got it all together. And it's like, no, like I still, that type of affirmation, and not even just the award itself, but the response of the award. Mm-hmm. People being like, we see you, LC, like we're with you, LC, like this is well deserved, mm-hmm. LC, right? Those are the type of voices that can combat like other voices that may exist.
Absolutely. I mean, well, one, that was a great way to start the new year, like with, you know, you being on the cover. But to your point, I think people think, oh, you've arrived or you've gotten to this level and you're, it's smooth sailing. But I can speak for myself and say I often question, like, why am I here? Why am I really doing what I'm supposed to be doing? You know, you always have this like assessing.
That's
what
right.
You're doing, your purpose, right? And I'm sure that would be the same for you. And then maybe having the health challenges, you're like, okay, am I taking on too much? Am I doing too much? You know, but then to have that confirmation, like you're still on the right path.
That's right.
Right. And leading in a way that I've never seen before. And so I'm a fangirl. I'm in awe of you. I mean, I sent you the thing or in our little group chat, especially when you wanted Kelly Clarkson's show, which we're about to talk about. I'm like, look at our girl, like in our little Yelp group, and everybody's like, oh my gosh, everybody's tuning in. Some people came to the viewing that was here.
Yes.
I mean, you are like, you have everybody smiling and so supportive and just excited for where you're going. So can you tell us a little bit about the Kelly Clarkson show, how that came about and that experience? And then you were in the Dispatch right after that. And so, I mean, you've been on like a tour.
Been on my little my little bootleg press tour, sponsored by myself.
I am the agent.
Right, I am the agent. My people, I am my people. Please just call me directly. And so, yeah, no, that was, so I was able recently, like, flew to New York to be featured on the Kelly Clarkson show, you know, and it was just a really surreal experience. I was so nervous, which is really funny because people who have watched the show, they're like, you can't even tell you were nervous.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, well, I was, you know, I was so nervous to have that opportunity. But again, I think to be able to speak about Zora's House on that national platform, I think really just speaks to the fact that this is an idea that is located and founded here in Franklin County, but it is something that the need is pervasive. Mm-hmm. And all over the country, right? Mm-hmm. That like, even on a national stage, there were so many people, we got so many responses from all over the country that were like, I wish I had a Zora's house mm-hmm. here, and this is so cool, and when will you guys come to X City? And I'm like, listen, I'm still trying to potty train my toddler, okay? Y'all gonna have to give me a couple years. But it was just such a really surreal experience. And I will say, you know, something that I've been grappling with since coming back, and you kind of mentioned like, oh yeah, you were the Dispatch and Columbus CEO and then Kelly Clarkson. And it is something that, sorry, Ivory, you can come in. I want to pause so that you can. I don't want Ivory standing on the porch for like the next 15 minutes. You know, something that I've kind of been grappling with, you kind of mentioned like, oh, there was Columbus CEO and the Dispatch and the Kelly Clarkson show, is that I do feel that there is a hyper visibility of Black women's leadership in a way that can be challenging if it's not met with the same amount of support.
Come on.
Right? And yeah. So it's like, it was really, I remember like a couple weeks ago, I posted something on LinkedIn where, you know, it was a couple days after Kelly Clarkson, and it was like, I was on this high and everybody was like, LC, like you're so amazing and you're a trailblazer and you're doing this and you're doing mm-hmm. that. And, you know, I started off the year in a really low place mm-hmm. because last year was super exhausting and stressful. We were realizing that within the campaign that we were having to jump through hoops mm-hmm. that other organizations weren't having to jump through, mm-hmm. That we were having folks who were, you know, giving us like a percentage of what they typically give to mm-hmm. a campaign. We were experiencing people who would make a minimal investment in Zora's house, but then want to put us like on the front of their like, you know, report, their diversity initiative, mm-hmm. their commercial. And it's like, you know, and all of that took a toll.
Yeah.
All of that took such a toll. And I remember at the end of last year, I was just like crying. And I was like, I'm so exhausted. Mm-hmm. I'm so exhausted because I feel like we are working so hard. And the fact that, you know, our campaign is one of the few campaigns that has happened in this community that has gotten over 90% funded without a lead sponsor, mm-hmm. without a lead sponsor, right? Nobody to write the like big check.
Yeah.
And I just, I'm going to leave that here for people to sit with that and wonder like why that is and what that means for a Black woman who is trying to do something that has not been done before mm-hmm. and to constantly be having to do more. You know, that adage, like you got to work twice as hard to get half as far. Mm-hmm. And that has never felt truer. Mm-hmm. And so it was a really interesting moment where I was seeing myself in all these places and getting all of this like verbal reassurance, but the actual support that I was asking for, mm-hmm. can you fund me? Can you make this introduction? Can we figure out how to, you know, work around some of the older ways that you've done things that aren't accessible to a smaller organization, mm-hmm. right? Like those things weren't happening.
Yeah.
So it's like, you cannot make Black women hyper visible and then still not give them the support that they want. Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you so much for this award. It means a lot. But what I really want is to be done with this campaign so I can rest.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay. And so it is like, I haven't talked about that a lot publicly because I think it can be really challenging when people are like, oh my gosh, you know, we see you and you're killing it and you're this and you're that. And it's like, man, like I'm so visible, but I'm still not getting what I need.
Absolutely. And thank you for sharing that. I think people need to hear that, right? And as a funder, and well, before I say what I was going to say, I want to say that when we were here one time and we were meeting and you were like, can I ask some questions because I don't know how to navigate this.
Right.
Right.
And I was like, how does this work?
Yeah. And you were like, I don't have anybody, you know, telling me. And I was like, okay, well, I could walk you through this process, right? And, you know, and I would navigate you to the extent that I can through how we fund things at the county. And I think why I love working with the two commissioners that I have
is that I think they get it. They really get it. I love that I can come to work and have an administrator who's like, oh, absolutely. We're gonna put more money in the hands of Black and Brown organizations and businesses, because we know historically they are not funded, that they do have to jump through hoops only to get a check for like $25,000, where we historically we have these legacy organizations who don't have to perform or do nothing, and then they still get $1 million or $2 million, right? And their work isn't even half as transformational. I'm not saying that it's not needed in the community, but what you're trying to do is absolutely transformational, and it has not been done. And so they get it. And so we try and work really hard to remove barriers, but we see it. And obviously people come to us for capital campaigns, and there usually is a lead. There is a, I'm not going to call out companies, but there are usually, you know, companies who write a $2 million check or whatever, and it's like, use this as leverage. And that's unfortunate. Mm. That's unfortunate. That we deserve to be invested in at the same levels, or if not more, than other organizations that have had history in this community, but don't have an equity lens that perpetuate at times the barriers that we're trying to overcome, and they continue to put barriers in place. And so I'm sorry that that's been your experience.
Yeah, you know, some of the pieces of it, Zora Neale Hurston has this quote that I love, and I referenced in the LinkedIn post, and it, she says, if you're silent about your pain, they'll kill you and say you enjoyed it.
Absolutely.
Right? And so I look at these smiling articles and these awards, and I'm like, but I won't be silent though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not going to be silent about the other part of this, because that's important. And the other thing that I don't want to happen is that I don't want other Black women or women of color coming behind me and for somebody to say like, oh, LC did it, so why can't you?
Oh,
like, yes. Because what you're not about to do is use my journey and make it sound like it was this smooth and easy pathway so that anybody should be able to do it. I want to make sure that I am very vocal about and transparent about what this experience is like, what it takes, and some of the barriers, so that one, other women of color who are doing something similar don't feel like they're alone or feel like, damn, how come LC's figured it all out? I'm like, I'm over here struggling, sis, I'm struggling too. You know, I don't want them to feel that way. And I also don't want people to be able to use this success story, what will ultimately be a success story, to leverage it against other women of color and say, well, like, this person did it, like, you should be able to do it. That path behind me is rocky, it's thorny.
Come on.
It is not smooth, right? So anybody coming behind, it's like there are still shards on the ground.
Come on.
And people need to see that, and people need to know that.
I love that. I love that you said that, and I love that we can have this conversation, because I hear all the time, you know, and I will say Dayla knows it, because I can come in the office and I'm like, I'm not good today, or I could cry. And because I could say to someone, you know, it's hard, and there are times when I want to quit, and people will be like, I mean, you know how many people would kill to be where you are? It's so dismissive. And then I have to say now, you know how many it would kill people to be where I am? They don't know what it takes. They don't know the sacrifice, but they don't know what I had to go through to get here, right?
Oof.
The racism, the sexism, the ageism or reverse ageism, to be in this space. And then all that I have to do every day to show up, because I always have to prove.
That's right.
Every day.
That's right.
That I deserve to be here, right? Where other people just get passed.
That's right.
Right. It's expected. It's not easy. And I talk about being the first Black woman elected to be in a space, and that I won't be the last. But to your point, I don't want people to be like, well, Erica did it, or E did it, you know, I mean, clearly you could do it too. And it's like, wait a minute. Mm-mm.
That's right.
Mm-mm. You will not do that.
Mm-mm.
You won't do that to me, or you won't do that to the person coming behind. We lift as we climb, but what are you doing to make sure that the person that is coming behind doesn't have to go through all
the
hoops?
That's right.
That don't have to step on the glass.
That's right.
Are you here to make the path?
You sweeping? Who's sweeping?
Right. Right.
Who's sweeping? I'm walking. Somebody else got to be sweeping.
Right.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm going to ask you, you know, when you think about what leadership looks like and aspiring females who want to be, you know, in nonprofit or lead any type of organization or agency, what advice would you give
them.
Mm. Are you guys time checking or?
Yeah, or I was gonna say this might be just be a good way to wrap up. Mm-hmm.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
You know me, Erica, come here all day. We're like, yeah, girl, what next? What else you wanna talk about?
Like, okay, where's the wine?
Questions are out the window. Wine bottle has emerged. Okay. All right, you need to reread that. I totally just forgot what you asked me.
So for aspiring young women and girls who are looking to either lead a nonprofit or just be in leadership or just be who they are and be that authentically every single day, what advice would you give them?
Oh, that's such a good question. And you know, somebody asked me recently she kind of said, she was like, Elsie, you know, I feel like there's some audaciousness in you. Like, what has like fostered that? And you know, one, I grew up with an audacious mom, mm-hmm. right? So like, I grew up, my mom was a trailblazer in her field, super brilliant, smart, like didn't really take no for an answer, wasn't really afraid of anything or anybody. And I remember my mom always saying, not just to me, but to other people who would question whether or not she was capable of doing something. And she would say like, well, has somebody done it? Mm-hmm. And they'd be like, well, yeah, I mean, somebody's done it before. She's like, well, then I can do it. Mm-hmm. If somebody's done it, then I can do it. Right. And I just remember always kind of like hearing that. And that kind of like instilled in me this belief that like, oh, if somebody's done it, like I can do it. Mm-hmm. Right. And even like done a version of it. They don't need to have done exactly what I'm doing. You know, and I now get the privilege to be that somebody mm-hmm. for other people. But I remember growing up, that was something that was a big part of our understanding, the culture of our family. And then I think in very critical places in my life, I've met people who saw something in me that I didn't see in myself, mm-hmm. right? That like who could mirror something back that like I wasn't able to articulate or, you know, or even really see, right? Mm-hmm. That like, I remember when I met my husband, like we met at like this event, and after the event, we ended up talking for like 3 hours, right? And it was just, we like shut down the building. We just were like talking about bugs, talking about life. It was so cool. And I remember like that night, he was just looking at me and he was like, man, like, you're really special. And we didn't start dating for months and months, but like, even as a friend in a platonic way, and he didn't just say it to me. Mm-hmm. When we, I remember like his boss was like hiring for this like higher level opportunity in their org. And I was just like, I can't, I'm not gonna apply for that. And I mean, this man had literally known me like 2 days. Mm-hmm. And I remember hearing him say to his boss, you need to interview her. You're not gonna find somebody else like her. She's mm-hmm. special. And so to have somebody who like not only saw it, but would voice it, not just to me, but to like other people. Mm-hmm. And he has kind of like maintained that like idea that like, wow, you're really special. There's something that's really special about you. You know, and my husband's a very like practical mm-hmm. person. So, you know, he's a very like practical person. So for him, he's just like, I mean, clearly you're special. It's not even like clearly you're special. Like, you know, keep doing the special things you do. But it's like, you know, and so I think just like having met people in my life who saw something in me. Mm-hmm. And that's really what Doris House seeks to be, to like bring it full circle, right? Is like that space that like sees it in people mm-hmm. when they don't see it, right? The here you can find that person who you can talk with, you just met and you talked with for 3 hours. And at the end of it, they said, girl, there's something special about you, mm-hmm. right? You can meet that person here. And to be able to do that, I think, is something that's key for any Black woman or woman of color who is interested in leading, is mm-hmm. to find those people and those places that pour into us the way we pour into others.
I love that. I say that all the time when I'm asked, like, what would you say to young women and girls? I'm like, find your village, right?
Immediately.
Right?
Immediately.
Like, do not pass go.
Right.
Or like,
that's right. Don't. Because
you can't do it without them. Like, right. You don't want to do
that's
it
right.
without them.
That's right.
Because they will be the
the air, the breath that you need sometimes, and you will need that same thing for them.
Yes.
And so I can say that every time I've stepped in this space, I have always felt seen. I always feel like you make me feel special, like there is something special about me, there's something unique. And then I've seen how you interacted with other people, and you point that out with everyone. And you might not say, oh, this is the special thing, but you leave people moved, touched, and inspired. There is absolutely something special about you, girl. You are badass. And I thank you. I appreciate you. I appreciate all that you are doing in our community. I can't wait to come to the ribbon cutting. I can't wait to continue to be in this space and in the next one and see people travel from all over to see what's special about Zora's House. And why we need these in every community. So thank you.